Welcome back to the Illegal Kervaki Show. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Ezra Ginsberg and Richard Pollock. You can follow us on Twitter, at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And our website is www.illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Let's welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. He is an ESPN draft expert, Grant Saunier. Grant, good afternoon. How are you?
I'm great, guys. Thanks for having me. I heard this is the second half, or you're saving the best for the second half. Absolutely. Is that how it's going?
Exactly. We always start with the best interview in the second half of the show, so no pressure or anything.
Awesome. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Our pleasure, Grant. We're obviously have you on to talk about World Juniors. That's your area of expertise, scouting and prospects and that sort of thing. How much stock do you put in performances from the World Junior Tournament?
Well, I think you have to certainly put everything into perspective. There's no doubt there. For example, let's use draft eligible players in this particular tournament. A lot of people are going to be raving about Jonathan Duran and about how well he played, and he's a teammate of Nathan MacKinnon coming in. MacKinnon was consensus number one. Duran gets the golden spot and gets to play in much more suitable opportunities to produce. Therefore, some people may think he's better than Nathan MacKinnon. My suggestion on that would be just, it's a small sample tournament. You have to put things into perspective. And I think what you can do is you can really your stock can really rise as a result of the World Junior. But especially as a draft eligible, playing in a 19-year-old tournament, I think most experienced scouts will say, you know what, let's not hammer them too hard here. And again, some situations where draft eligible players weren't the key players in key ice time. So I think you can certainly help your stock. I think a lot of draft eligible players in this particular event did just that.
Grant, Jacob Trouba obviously is a hot topic here in Winnipeg, and Mark Scheifele drafted the year before him, but Trouba really made a dent in the World Junior Tournament, named to the All-Star squad, best defenseman. How good do you think he was in the tournament? How good do you think he can be? And what was your perception of him before the tournament?
Well, I have to say, what a difference a year makes. Like, I'll be honest with you, and I obviously very close and personal to the staff, the scouting staff, having worked with Marcel Como and Mark Hillier and the gang there when we were in Atlanta. And I'll be honest, I had concerns, and certainly this time last year, my concerns were warranted, and I think with the way Jacob handled it. But go back to what I just said, a draft eligible playing in a 19-year-old event, basically. Mm-hmm. He was in over his head last year. I'll be the first to admit that he played way better than I thought. Not only should Winnipeg be excited, I mean, the National Hockey League should be excited. This kid has really, really improved. And for me, it was never a doubt whether or not he had the physical attributes to play. It was never whether or not he was going to be good enough defensively. He was a man among boys in this tournament, as it was. But his processing of the game and the way that he has made the adjustments to simplify his game and to be able to make plays under pressure was night and day for me in this tournament. And that's a really good sign for the Winnipeg Jets.
Grant, you mentioned earlier that, we can't, overreact to the World Junior Hockey Championships because it is a small sample size. But based on the way these two played, and Scheifele also played very well for Team Canada, but based on maybe the way, taking into consideration Scheifele's been good for Barrie of the OHL this year, but just based on this tournament, do you think Jacob Trouba has overtaken Scheifele as maybe the Jets' top prospect? And I realize, rankings are subjective, but do you think it's safe to say that Trouba projects to be a better NHL defenseman than Scheifele does an NHL forward?
Well, that's an awful tough question. I'll answer that this way: is I'll say that I know that Kevin and the management staff and certainly the coaching staff will play this one close to the chest, because it's really difficult to play at a young age as a defenseman. Because when you make a mistake as a defenseman, it's under the microscope much finer than it is as a forward. And mistakes as a defenseman can really take away a great deal of confidence. I go back to when I was an assistant GM with the Florida Panthers. We drafted Jay Bouwmeester. You guys are out west. Everybody knows how much talk there was about this kid. And in retrospect and look back, hindsight, he should have went back to junior, and I know there was nothing for him to really play for in junior. People thought he was too good, but to play as a young kid you have to be really, really cautious of what happens. And Luke Shen is another example of a player that if you get in over your head and you lose your confidence, you never quite know if they're ever going to get it back. I don't think Jacob Trouba is going to be that type of player. I think he is so mature, and because he's physically ready, it looks like to play right now, that he'll be able to overcome some of the things that some younger kids have a tough time doing. So that's a tough question to say that he'll be a better defenseman than Scheifele will be a forward. I think Jets fans should be excited about both of them. They're both really, really good prospects.
Grant, you mentioned Jay Bouwmeester in Florida. Jacob Trouba obviously is playing for the University of Michigan. How do they make that decision whether Trouba becomes a Winnipeg Jet after 2 years in Michigan? We were debating this last week. Richie was saying that he thinks Trouba might only play one more year in Michigan, and I might agree with him, but how do they come to that decision based on the fact that Trouba might have aspirations to finish his college degree or something along those lines?
Yeah, and you know what? It's really, I know going through the process when you interview kids before you draft them at the combine and other, you know, personal interviews that you have, it's always asked of the kids, you know, when, you know, if you were asked to come out, would you come out? Some kids have flat out just say, I'm playing my 4 years of college. I don't know what Jacob Trouba's long-range plan is education-wise. It's usually because of physical stature that they leave them in college. They have to mature physically. They have to get stronger. And again, I'll suggest that Trouba's probably physically strong enough to play right now. He looks like a man. He played like a man. So that might speed up the process in terms of the way that management is thinking about whether or not they want to bring this kid in. And I'm not trying to manage the Winnipeg Jets here. They'll do a good enough job, and they're doing a great job, and they'll make the right decision. But in some cases, it really is up to the kid and the family. Like, sometimes the parents are involved, and they want their kids to get their full education before they move on.
We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by Grant Sonnier. He's a draft and prospect expert. He works for ESPN.com. Grant, you mentioned Jonathan Drouin earlier when we started this interview. Do you think he's really entered the race for number one overall pick? And if so, between him, Nathan MacKinnon, and Seth Jones, who is the number one overall pick whenever the next draft happens?
Well, I'll preface this by saying that going into the before the tournament, I had published my top 30, and Jonathan Drouin was number three on it. And if you were to, if anyone that's listening read what I said, and I live in the Maritime Provinces, so I'm afforded the luxury of seeing Halifax probably more than I should, but I see them a lot, which is a good thing in my mind. And on a lot of nights, he's better than Nathan MacKinnon. They're two entirely different players. Nathan MacKinnon is that explosive north-south type player that's got great drive and determination. Jonathan Drouin reminds me of young Claude Giroux, where he's got enough character and elite vision, elite skill to make the individual play. Not that MacKinnon doesn't. And then you throw Seth Jones into the picture. Based on this tournament, if I had never seen the three before and I had to decide right now after this tournament, Seth Jones would be the number one pick for me. He's too big. He's too mobile. There's just too many good NHL qualities within this package just to not take him at the first pick. He's 6'5", still growing. He's one of the best draft-eligible skating defensemen that I've ever seen in my 20 years of experience. And he really answered the bell this year. I think he really played well for a draft-eligible player. He was not just good, he was a star on a lot of shifts.
Talk about Seth Jones, Grant. You talk about, you know, Jacob Trouba impressing you. Were there any other players that you thought, whoa, you know, this player's taking the next step this season, maybe in this tournament, and I expect better things from him in the future than maybe I thought beforehand?
Well, I'd be a fool if I didn't bring up Gibson. I mean, he's clearly the MVP of the tournament. Mm-hmm. Like, Anaheim should be really excited about this kid. He's, you know, he played in the program at the National Development Program, elected not to go to college, and he's playing in the OHL. You know, he can certainly turn pro at an expedited rate, and he's, again, size is there, strength is there, like all the obvious things in the big saves and everything that he did in the tournament spoke for itself. But even the way he handled traffic, even the way that he, you know, he was able to battle around traffic and when bumped, he kept his ground. Like those are things that as you get to the higher levels become important in that position. And boy, he was he's really taken his game to another step, another level. And clearly the way people play in front of you has a lot to do with how well you play as a goaltender. And he had a team that played pretty damn good in front of him the whole tournament.
Grant, on the flip side, did anybody not play to the caliber that you were expecting?
Yeah, I mean, and I know this guy's going to get beat up a lot, but you know, when you take a player like Ryan Murphy to an event like this, mm-hmm. it unfortunately for Ryan Murphy, and he had a good game today. He got his first 2 points today, but unfortunately for him, he's going to be measured based on his offensive output because that's clearly what he is as an offensive defenseman. You know, Canada has taken guys like this in the past. Ryan Ellis, I mean, he was a superstar in this event. I think he played 3 years. I want to say he had 8-10 points. You know, in the years he played, even the guy with not nearly as much profile as Ryan Murphy, Chris Russell, a Western Hockey League guy, when he played for Team Canada, undersized defenseman there for his offense, he put up the numbers. So I think you know, certainly the whole team played poorly in the semifinals. Let's be honest, it wouldn't have mattered if Ryan Ellis was really good, but when one thing and then another thing and another thing doesn't fall into place, all of a sudden then you end up losing the game that you needed to win. And I thought Ryan Murphy would put up numbers, and I thought he would be better.
Grant, did you think that and we're talking about Dennis Bayak about this at the top of the show, who's broadcasting for TSN over in UFA. Did you think that Canada maybe had too many of the same type of player on the back end?
Well, you know, Canada does a great job. I mean, and I want to say this too. You know, I preface this by saying that Hockey Canada they do a tremendous job. Like, you know, Kevin Pendergast and the people that put all the hours into this, they deserve a lot of credit. Let's be honest, the rest of the world is getting a whole lot better. Yeah. Not that Canada isn't getting better in year by year, but the gap is closed. Therefore, the results shouldn't be lopsided anymore. And you know, I think where they've really done a good job is they've gotten guys to accept their roles. Like the shutdown pair is Hamilton and Harrington, and Hamilton is an offensive right. junior defenseman. So, you know, I think their defensive core. Maybe Reinhart next year will be just like Trouba. He looked like by times he was in over his head, but I guarantee you he's a heck of a prospect. And if he gets the opportunity to play in it next year, I would venture to say he'll be a whole lot better. I think the personnel was there. I just think it was a matter they didn't execute at the right time.
Yeah, Reinhart, of course, suspended for 3 more games, depending on his appeal process. So that could be interesting if he ends up playing for Team Canada next year. Well, let's go on this last question here, Grant. Phil Housley, you know, great job as the head coach of the Team USA. You know, with this performance, do you think he's earned himself a role as either an NCAA head coach or as an assistant coach in the NHL running a team's defense?
Well, I mean, his career is storied. He obviously was one of the greatest defensemen to ever play, certainly was the greatest American defenseman to ever play, and you know, when you win a tournament like this, it certainly opens some doors. I mean that's Phil Housley coaching high school hockey. I mean I'd have to ask him the question. Maybe he's happy doing that, but he did a really good job. Like, these tournaments are so hard because you bring in a group of guys, and you know, their motto this year was team first. Because almost every guy, regardless of team, but almost every man to a player, they come in and they're going to be asked to play roles that they're not usually asked to play because they're almost always the best players on their team. So they did a marvelous job. I mean, you can talk about the benching of Rocco Grimaldi. It certainly makes him look like a great coach because Rocco Grimaldi, obviously something happened. Yeah. He got benched. Rocco Grimaldi had the character to bounce back, and lo and behold, he's a national hero today, scoring the 2 goals. So Phil Housley obviously has the ability to get the pulse of his hockey club and understand the right buttons to push, and certainly push the right buttons at this event.
Grant Sonje, he's a draft expert. He's a prospect expert for ESPN.com. Thank you very much for joining us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
My pleasure, guys. Thanks for having me, and Happy New Year to all of you.
To you too, Grant. Take care.
Thanks a lot, Grant.
Thanks, Grant.
Before we go to break, quick update from New York. It's being reported that the pension issue has been resolved. Darren Dreger was just on TSN, and I'm going to paraphrase what he said. He says that the mediation process was successful. They are now closing in on their issues with minimal issues still in play. There is a heightened level of positivity as we get to a point where it seems like the lockout might be nearing its end. We'll see. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Here's the music. Big thank you to Grant Sonje of ESPN for joining us, talking the World Junior prospects.
Grant used to work with the Thrashers, so he knows the scouting staff, as he alluded to, quite well. And
that's
so
right.
It's a nice insight.
Because it is the same scouting staff. A large percentage of it is the same scouting staff as had been with the Thrashers that did come up over here to Winnipeg. I mean, led by Marcel Comeau.
Yep. And you know, I think that they've done a very good job. If you look at all the first round
based on Trouba,
all the first round picks they've got: Kane, Burmistrov, Bogo, Little, Scheifele, Trouba. I mean, all those guys.
You know what really does help too? Picking in the top 10 every year.
Exactly. That's true.
Yeah, and that's more Trouba. So though, is also having an organization that gives them time to develop, which was always the big problem in Atlanta.
Yep.
You know, no fault of the guys doing the scouting for the most part. Simply the organization just did not let these guys develop.
I thought it was really interesting what he said about Jay Bouwmeester. If you listen to the show last week, I actually compared Trouba to Bouwmeester, even though now that I've watched Trouba even more, I think he's more similar to actually Bogosian. I was telling Richie this. You know, another big American defenseman. I think Trouba's a little bit more nastier than Bogo. But if it's Bogo or Bouwmeester, if you want to compare him to, those are both good defensemen. But I thought it was interesting what he said about Bouwmeester and maybe being better served playing another year in junior, because they're going to have an interesting situation with Trouba. He's in his first year at University of Michigan. Do they sign him after this year, after next year?
Well, it's an interesting question, and you brought it up, and you asked Grant about that. It's a delicate balance, because between the player wanting to spend more time in university or in college, at the University of Michigan in Trouba's sense, versus coming up to the NHL, because the two sides may differ on that, and we have seen instances. I believe was it Jack Johnson or Eric?
What about him?
Who was drafted by Carolina? Which Johnson?
Jack Johnson.
Jack Johnson. Didn't he want to spend more time in college, and the Hurricanes wanted him to come play for the Hurricanes earlier, and that was what created a fair bit of conflict between the two sides?
Wasn't Jack Johnson Michigan too?
Yep.
So, I mean, sometimes if both sides aren't on the same page in terms of a player's development, it can cause a conflict. And in the case of Johnson, he ended up being traded by the Hurricanes.
But he kind of ran himself. He basically demanded to be traded, I believe, at the end, or wanted to. But the truth is, the player holds the hammer, essentially, in this case, because if they want to return, they can return.
Right.
The team's contract offer would probably be the same regardless.
Well,
but you want to be able to work hand-in-hand and not have any kind of disagreements at that early stage of a player's development. So
that's right. I mean, if the guy's in his first year your system and you're already getting conflict with him, that's not usually a good sign. Not saying that's going to happen with Trouba by any stretch, but it will be interesting to see what the team has in store for him versus if the player has something completely different in store. How quickly does he want to make it into the NHL?
Well, you have to also take into account, and I wrote about this in the article we spoke about in the first hour, and that's the right side depth of the Jets defense. And you have Dustin Bufflin and Zach Bogosian manning the right side with players like Zach Redmond and Paul Postma, also right side defensemen. So, do you rush Jacob Trouba up to play, as it currently stands, maximum right now, third pairing right side D, and you kind of work him up that way? That may be the perfect fit for him. Maybe it's you want him another year development, you want him to play a little bit more when he comes out. I don't see him staying more than next year. I said that last week. He's too physically mature. There's a processing that goes along with it. But as Grant just mentioned, it's so true. Like Jonathan Huberdeau, talent-wise, made the Florida Panthers last year, but physically wasn't mature enough to play.
Right.
Whereas it's kind of the opposite with Trouba. Physically, he's mature enough to play right away. The question is, can he process the game? And clearly, he's taken steps in that regard. So it's something to take into account moving forward.
And Richie, what Grant would say as well is everyone looks at a player and they see what he's doing in the OHL, and you know, that means a lot. Don't get me wrong. It's great that these guys play well in the not just the OHL, the CHL, in Huberto's case, the QMJHL. But you can be a very good offensive player, but because you don't have the physicality or the physical development, you can easily struggle. And we saw that with very good players, even a Vincent LeCavalier or Joe Thornton. Those guys didn't. Not everyone comes into the league as an 18-year-old. Actually, very few come in as an 18-year-old and are 60, 70-point players.
Oh, yeah.
But a guy like Trouba, if you're Kevin Cheveldayoff and Zinger, you're watching this tournament and you're ecstatic. I mean, the guy was unbelievable. He had a four-point game, and they knew that he was a good player. And he's by all accounts, he's played. I haven't watched him play for the University of Michigan, but by all accounts, he's been very good mm-hmm. for the University of Michigan. So whether he plays 2 years or 3 years, when he comes up, I think what you're getting at is I don't think they're going to bring him up wanting him to play a sixth or seventh defenseman role. They're probably going to want to put him in a top four role.
Well, it depends.
If possible.
I mean, that depends on organization, because you want to maybe put him up against the lesser competition to ease his way into the roster.
And that's a good point, because I think when you got a guy like that, I think you start him at the bottom, yeah. And then if he grows into the role and plays, you know, and plays to be good enough against your top competition, that's a great problem to have.
And you can trade a guy like Bufflin or Bogosian, or you can move Bufflin forward. You have options. A team always wants options. Successful teams have options. The Red Wings have options. Thomas Tatar, guys that they have, Gustav Nyquist, they can put them in the minors because they have options. They can wait until Datsyuk's ready to bring them over. Teams that don't have options, other teams, they get desperate and they pull guys up too early.
You don't want to overreact too much just based on the World Juniors.
That's right.
But going into the World, actually,
everybody's
the World
overreacting
Juniors,
right now.
Not exactly, myself included.
You are overreacting.
I like to overreact, though, sometimes. But going into this season in the NCAA, people were saying, oh, is Trouba even a top four defenseman? You could make an argument he might be he could project to be a number one defenseman. Why not? The guy really has the capabilities to be a number one defenseman. He could be a shutdown defenseman. He's got offensive skills. He can pass the puck. I mean, again, you don't want to overreact too much, but I think it's safe to say Jacob Trouba is a very good prospect, as opposed to maybe when the Jets drafted him ninth overall, people were saying, okay, good defenseman, was very good with the U.S. national development team. But I think now people are seeing him at the international level, and they're saying, okay, this guy isn't just good, he's really good.
Yeah.
Interesting, I'm following along on Twitter here, things are coming from New York. A lot of positivity coming out, but none of it from the PA side, which is sort of the reverse of what we've seen with PA saying, we're close, we're close, we're close. But, you know, all these guys who are, you know, contacting their players or sources are saying, you know, maybe the NHL thinks that we're close, but not yet from us. So it seems like the NHLPA are the ones pouring a little bit of cold water on this right now, whereas the NHL are the ones who are speaking most positively about it.
Well, who gets the backlash of that, media-wise?
Well, the NHLPA does, of
players
course.
Players do. So it doesn't hurt the NHL to put it out there.
Yeah. Reported that both sides are now individually in caucus. Discussing, I guess, the latest agreements between they're no longer meeting face-to-face. They're now discussing on their own.
Hold on, Drew. You're saying caucus. It's like when Drew was back in Ottawa working for the Liberals. Caucus.
That's right.
I like it.
I know. That's,
Drew, weren't you the Liberal whip?
I was not the Liberal whip. That's very clever, though, let me tell you. And bad news for the LA Kings. This is very much unconfirmed as of now, but he's wherever Anze Kopitar has been playing. Has he been playing in,
I don't know.
I'm not sure where.
I want to say Continental Hockey League.
Unconfirmed reports that he's got a lower body injury, might be out 3 to 4 weeks.
That's like a week in an NHL season.
Well, not necessarily. You don't know. You don't know that it's a week. I mean, if he's out for a month, you know, that's
2 weeks. 2 weeks till the season starts. Say he's out 2 weeks. If there is a season, Mike Richards can certainly fill in adequately as a first line center for 2 weeks.
You're so casual and relaxed about all these things. When off the air, we're talking about how much of this is going to be a sprint, and you can't afford to really have any letdown.
Well, you're the LA Kings. You just won the Stanley Cup. You have enough depth that you can afford to have a letdown.
Wow.
It's like the Jets with Bogosian when your second pairing is like Grant Klitsam and Ron Hainsey playing against Evgeny Malkin.
We'll see.
He was playing in Sweden.
Sweden, okay, yeah. There you go. So anyways, looks like Anze Kopitar might be injured. Richard's down playing it. But,
Mora.
You know.
He was playing for Mora of the Swedish Tier 2 League, in fact. God bless Google, by the way.
You were pretty quick on that, I got to say, Ezzy. You're getting better with that iPhone.
Yeah. Well, you know, luckily, we're not going to have to talk about the Swedish Tier 2 League again, even though, you know, it's probably a good league. That's not what people in Winnipeg want to be hearing about. People in Winnipeg want to be hearing about the Jets. So,
are we getting more Remus in the last hour?
Or? We might be doing that. We're not sure. Let's go to break. 1 hour to go. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We'll keep you abreast of what's happening in New York, live on TSN 1290. 2 hours down, 1 hour to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/Illegal Curve. And the website is www.illegalcurve.com. This segment of the show is brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. For over 25 years, Rumors has been Winnipeg's home for the best in stand-up comedy. For a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Tonight at Rumors, two shows, 7:45 and 10:30. Tommy Savitt is performing at Rumors tonight. He'll also be here next week. And just a top-notch lineup of comedians in the new year. The Incredible Boris, comedian hypnotist, very funny guy. He's coming up at the end of the month. Glenn Foster, he'll be here. And, of course, we've talked about on this show a couple times, Rob Schneider will be back. We're quite excited for that. And, of course, also, later on in April, Tom Green from the Tom Green Show, not the Green Tom Show.
Well done, Drew. Thank you.
Anyways, you can get tickets and showtime information at rumorscomedyclub.com, or you can give them a call at 204-488-4520. Keep you abreast of everything that happens in New York just as soon as we get updates regarding it. You know, there's progress that has been made. Still a ways to go, apparently, but progress has been made, which is always a good sign. In the meantime, let's talk about some realignment and playoff expansion, because there's talk out there. You know, people are suggesting that the NHL is going to expand the playoffs to a 20-team postseason, doing something similar to what the Major League Baseball did with having sort of that one-game wild card prior to getting into the divisional series, you know, to create that excitement of that one-game opportunity. Your immediate thought or your first reaction to the thought that you might hear of a 20-team NHL postseason?
I'll let Richie get in here right away, but when I first saw that, what I first thought was... For fans, that's great. I mean, if you ask Remus, who's probably the biggest baseball fan in the room, even though you guys are big baseball fans too, the wild card races this year were great, and the games themselves were great. And if you look at what happened with the LA Kings last year, I sure didn't pick them to beat the Vancouver Canucks in the Western Conference and go on to win the Stanley Cup. And I don't think a lot of people did either. So if you look at the LA Kings, they struggled just to make the playoffs, and they ended up going on a fantastic run and winning the Stanley Cup. And I think, you know, when the news was broken, it hasn't been confirmed at all by the NHL, but there's just speculation that they're talking about it. What they're saying is that because there will be four conferences, and obviously the Jets will be in one of the Western conferences.
We don't know that for sure.
Well, not for sure, but that's what the NHL wants is four conferences. And what they say would happen if there were four extra teams, meaning that right now there's 16 and then they move to 20, is that they would have a best of three between the two lowest seeds in each conference.
Yeah, you know what we should do? We should let the AHL teams in the playoffs too now.
I agree.
Like, how many more teams do you want to let in the playoffs? 20 teams out of a 30-team league? Why would I even pay to go see regular season games? They don't mean anything.
In the last decade of NHL action, have you ever felt that there is a, you know, if only the 17th place team had been in there. Oh. Boy, how unfair it is.
Okay,
only,
I know you guys are being sarcastic.
If only Dallas had been in the playoffs last year, they might have made a run with a hot Kari Lehtinen and won the cup.
You're saying it's absurd?
It's absurd.
Was that the clip of Richie saying that's absurd?
No,
or
that's actually,
live Richie saying that's absurd?
Like, what are they talking about? You're going to expand the playoffs. More than half the teams already make the playoffs.
Shouldn't they be allowing less teams in the playoffs?
Oh my god, a best of three. Let's prolong the playoffs so we're playing in mid-July. It's absurd.
Well, I have nothing better to do. I'll watch hockey in mid-July.
Why don't we invite some baseball teams in the playoffs? I can't get in that league, might as well get in this league.
So Richie's saying that he doesn't like...
To summarize, Richard is not in favor of this. I tend to agree with Richard on this front. I mean, all you're doing at that point is you're just watering down the regular season even more.
You're finding ways to make more money. Greedy people trying ways to make more money.
Yeah. But, I mean, you know, so, okay, you sneak in there as the 18th team to make the postseason. As a fan...
18th team.
I know, it's absurd. Just the concept is ridiculous.
So
but as
bad.
A fan, are you... Oh, man, thankfully we made it in here as the 18th team. Now we're going to go on a run.
You know what I would have loved to see last year, you know? What was the 1-8 matchup last year in the East?
In the East, wasn't it? I mean,
Rangers and Capitals.
Right. Rangers,
Ottawa.
I would have loved to see who was the ninth seed. Was it Florida or no? Florida.
No, Florida made it in the playoffs.
Florida. Who was the ninth seed? I'm trying to remember last year.
Montreal.
Oh, wouldn't you have loved to see the Ottawa-Tampa best of three? Oh, it would have been great hockey. You know, with both teams not being able to put up four lines of NHL talent, I couldn't have waited to see that. And then prolonging the playoffs longer. It would have been great. I mean, it would have been great hockey. And then in the West, who's the best team in the West last year? Vancouver played LA.
Yeah.
So we should have.
Did you watch hockey last year?
Oh, so, you know, it was eight months ago. Yeah, like, seriously, it hasn't been a game. Anyhow, well, L.A., well, why don't we watch L.A. play against whatever middling team, Dallas. That would have been a great best of three to fall asleep to.
Richie, if I can clarify, too, I don't think there's no way this is going to happen.
We should have a consolation playoffs for the teams that didn't make it, and we should have that on like they do in the NCAA with the NIT tournament. They should have that going on simultaneously so they can make more money.
Is Richie introducing a new character called Captain Sarcasm?
I mean, I agree wholeheartedly. I'm not sure this won't happen yet, though.
I don't think it will for the reasons that obviously Richie's being sarcastic, but I agree. There's 16 of 30 teams that make the playoffs. 20 is too much.
Yeah, but these guys, it's all about money. So, you know, what is the disincentive for ownership to not do this?
Integrity? I know it's a faux pas to mention that word when talking about the game. But integrity? I mean, keep the integrity in the game. And to be honest with you for a second, keep the integrity in the game. More than half of the teams in the National Hockey League make it. Very few are elite on a consistent basis. And you can't let a team like Vancouver, who goes out and has an amazing season 2 years in a row,
Not get rewarded. Yeah.
Oh, you know, the team at the bottom gets to play a couple more games. Oh, three extra games. These guys play 82 games and then 100 games when they make a long haul and they play exhibition games. Don't give me that. I mean, make the regular season mean something. Make the superior teams have some benefit.
And the reality
so
is,
how do you make the,
right now,
you know,
this,
you know, if anything, the adjustments you make are you keep the playoffs the same and you make the eighth seed in the first round play five road games and two home games, something like that.
Sure.
Reward the people who are doing a great job. Stop rewarding the middle. And I know this lockout's very much for the middle teams, but you can allow them to compete on a financial level. But at some point, you have to let the best be the best because everybody wants to watch the best. And if, for example, a team like Dallas were to get in and play LA and make some crazy run, they might be making some crazy run. And they might, once in a million, make a shot and win. But are they really the best team? Is that really what you want to see?
And you already have the chance, Richie, if you're an eighth seed, like we talked about before. If you're the LA Kings, you upset the Vancouver Canucks. I mean, you can still go all the way as an eighth seed. So, but right now, I mean, I would argue right now
that the regular season is already too watered down by having 16 teams in the playoffs.
Absolutely, I agree, but you can't make it anymore. It's a crazy suggestion, and it's something that better get thrown out. I mean, these people can't even get realignment.
Well, let's talk about
playoffs.
Then let's talk about realignment. You know, that is the issue that, I mean, once they get the CBA put to bed.
Why don't we get grade six kids in here to tell us which time zones the teams are in and which right. conferences they should be in?
You divide it all up, Richie, and if you're in the central time zone, you play in the central conference or in the conference with the Chicago Blackhawks and all those other teams.
Except
so
that commercial
it shouldn't be that difficult.
A commercial on TV where they interview the kids and they're like, what's better, one or two? Like, two. Two is more. It's like, what's better, teams in the Eastern time zone being in the Eastern Conference or teams in the Western Conference being in different time zones, such as the Central, Mountain, and West? Pacific, excuse me. I mean,
I'm aware that only the NHL can make these issues be more complicated than they seem to need to be. But, I mean, from the NHL's perspective, they would say, well, we have too many teams that are playing in the Eastern Conference versus the Western Conference.
You have Winnipeg in the Central. You flip them in the schedule, and it's pretty simple. You flip them with Columbus or Detroit.
Well, so, okay. We both agree that both Columbus and Detroit belong in the Eastern Conference based on the fact that they're in the Eastern time zone.
Okay.
They're the only teams in the Western Conference that are in the Eastern time zone. So, you know, and we know there's an easy switch with Winnipeg with one of those two teams.
Uh-huh. Yep.
How do you resolve which one of the two, though?
You talk to each team and figure out who's more east.
Columbus by a little bit.
Yeah, so
but not by much. Dave was on the show when Drew was away last week. I agree with Richie. This shouldn't be complicated, and especially considering that and I think you guys would agree, the NHL and the NHLPA have complicated things for themselves during this entire negotiation. Sure, these types of negotiations are complicated. You're dealing with a multi-billion dollar industry, but they've almost micromanaged every single little thing complicated everything. And, you know, as far as the realignment goes, Drew, I mean, Winnipeg for Columbus makes sense because Columbus is the most easternmost team that is in the West right now. Detroit is obviously second, and it isn't that far, much far removed from where Columbus is as far as looking at America on the map. But it also depends what happens with Phoenix, because if there's still a possibility Phoenix might move to another city.
Well, so but you can't wait. That's not
No, they're not going to wait. They're going to figure it out. I'm just saying that has to factor into it, because if Phoenix moves to Seattle, okay, that they're going to stay in the West. If they move to Quebec City, I mean, these things, I'm not saying these are going to happen, but it's a realistic possibility if Greg Jameson, you know, doesn't end up becoming the owner of the Coyotes. But as far as next year, I mean, come on. I mean, it's Columbus or Detroit moving to the East and Winnipeg moving to the West.
I guess on the realignment talk, Larry Brooks, who reported that the Jets may be switching with Columbus last week, just tweeted out that the league has indicated a willingness to come off $60 million for a hard cap for the 2013-14 season, maybe go up to 63 or 64, but he's not sure that'll be in return for what. He's not sure.
That's one of the concessions that the players were looking for. So just to reiterate that, Larry Brooks of the New York Post, who's definitely been pro-player throughout these negotiations.
I mean, throughout his whole career.
Yeah, exactly. He's been very much pro-player.
You wouldn't believe how much of a say he had in that Bobby Holik signing with the Rangers, how much pull he had. He had campaigned for that signing for like 3 years.
Bobby Holik was a guy, for those who don't know, he was bought out after the last lockout.
Richard's talking about when the Rangers signed him from the Devils.
To 9 years. Oh, okay, yeah. To 5 years and $45 million. Like, Larry Brooks had written about that so often. That's how much pull he has in that area. I think he had a significant effect on that.
Interesting. I told you this. I didn't tell Ezzy. Did you know that Larry Brooks was the former Devils PR guy?
Didn't know that.
He was. Remember the famous clip of Jim Schoenfeld?
Koharski.
Yelling at Koharski.
Yeah.
Calling him a fat pig in the playoffs.
Yeah, you guys were yelling at each other about the donuts between the breaks.
It's true. That's true. You know, the famous clip, it's on YouTube everywhere.
Sure.
You've seen it. It's Jim Schoenfeld, the Devils head coach, yelling at Koharski, Don Koharski, after a playoff game about a blown call, calling him a fat pig on it. You know, you can hear it in the clip. Yeah. The person pulling away Jim Schoenfeld from that situation, Larry Brooks.
Really?
Wow.
Yeah.
I met Larry Brooks at the Stanley Cup final in 2004. That was pretty fast. This is a quick aside.
In Calgary.
Story. Yeah, in Calgary. And he was, because what happened was when the Stanley Cup finals were there, and we were sitting up at the upper deck, when the Stanley Cup finals happened, there's not enough seats for all the media, so they have, in the press box, so they have some of the media sitting in the upper deck.
In the auxiliary press box.
Yeah, auxiliary press box.
That's where we'd be sitting if the Jets had their choice.
Well, after somebody pushed you out of the upper deck.
Yeah.
Anyhow, so Larry Brooks come up the stairs, and I'm going to get up some popcorn or something. I'm like, oh, Larry Brooks. I start talking to him. Everybody around him was making fun of Larry Brooks. Actually, somebody would recognize him in Calgary. Had a good chat. Nice guy.
He's one of the best hockey journalists out there. I mean,
you and him piss off Tortorella more than anybody.
Exactly.
That's true.
We'll have to we have both managed to irritate John Tortorella after a Jets game or something. I don't know. But yeah, he's one of the good ones.
Go again, Rim.
What the hell kind of question is that?
It's Tortorella to Ezzy. Yeah. Still probably my highlight of last year.
Yeah, that was definitely my highlight.
Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Shortly past 2:15 in the afternoon, you can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And our website is www.illegalcurve.com. Ezzy asked us a question earlier this week.
Yeah, can I borrow money?
One of the questions in the show plan.
Yeah.
So here we go. What teams are best suited to get off to a hot start when the NHL, assuming the NHL does return in the next couple of weeks?
And I think it's a very valid question. That's a double V right there. Very valid. But like we talked about before, when the NHL and the NHLPA come to an agreement, whether it's tomorrow or Monday or Tuesday, they're going to have somewhere in the neighborhood of 8 to 10 days to have a makeshift training camp and get their acts in order. And then, you know, the season starts. So it's interesting to think what teams are in a better position. And the thing is, there are teams that are all over the place. There's certain teams that have more players playing over in Europe, and there are more teams that have less players playing over in Europe or elsewhere, the AHL or something like that. I was looking at a couple of teams that I think, because of the position they're in maybe isn't going to result in a Stanley Cup, but it will result in a hot start to start the season. One of the teams I thought of, and this is going to be no surprise because they're one of the up-and-coming teams, is the Edmonton Oilers. And if you look at the guys that they have playing for the Oklahoma City Barons, and Jordan Eberle and Justin Schultz.
If I have to hear another thing about Justin Schultz, I might just drive my head into the wall.
I'm pretty sure that the 35 minutes we talked about him on July 1st when he picked the Oilers was enough, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, there's an embarrassment of riches on the Oilers, you know, basically on as far as forwards go. But you look at Devin Dubnyk, who is obviously playing in the Spengler Cup. But the Edmonton Oilers stand out as one team. They're so young. And, they're one team that I think are going to come out of the gate extremely strong with all those guys that are excelling in the AHL and elsewhere, in Yakupov's case, in the KHL. Another team, you know, that I think is one of my early picks to win the Stanley Cup next year. I know we're getting way ahead of ourselves.
Well, we're going to have to do a season preview show next week.
Yeah. One of the other teams for me was the Tampa Bay Lightning. Obviously, the last time the Jets played, it was against the Tampa Bay Lightning, Stamkos getting his 50th. But, the Tampa Bay Lightning are another team that I think are poised for a lot of success, and they made moves. Stevie Y brought in a new goaltender, and Lindback, and he brought in Matt Carl. And, you know, they were one of the teams that we really liked what they did in the offseason. I think they're one of the teams that are poised to really excel early on after the lockout. And they have some players also playing in the AHL that are doing well. Brett Connolly's one of them, who didn't have a very good rookie year. But the thing that I find fascinating is that the teams that are basically coming back after a poor season, there's going to be so many difficulties after only having an 8 or 10 day training camp, because you really only have basically a week. That's a week. I mean, a week, week and a half to make all of those roster spot decisions. And there are still guys we haven't even talked about this. There's teams that have to sign key restricted free agents. The Dallas Stars have to sign Ben.
Yeah,
the Montreal Canadiens haven't signed PK Subban. I mean, we're talking about, you know, getting ready for a season in 10 days. These guys have to still get signed.
Given what we know about how the new CBA is going to look, for the most part, we have a fairly decent idea. Which teams are in a better position now? The teams that signed their RFAs right before the deadline, or the teams like assuming that they get them signed relatively easily, the teams that didn't sign their RFAs right before the deadline?
In terms of the success?
Money-wise. Should the Jets have signed Evander Kane when they signed him, or should they have waited until after the new CBA was agreed to?
I mean, you're going to have more restrictions on salaries, don't you think?
I would think so.
You think it might benefit them, although with the Kane situation, I mean, he doesn't necessarily want to be here whether he does or not. We don't know. He might highball the number just so he can get out of town. So I don't know. It goes both ways. But I want to quickly go. If I had to say, Drew, it probably benefits in terms of money-wise. You know, you say, hey, if you're trying to sign PK Subban in Montreal, say, hey, we got kind of a cap crunch here. Like, not that we don't want you to get a fair value, but we can't go that high. So it depends on the player. It depends on the negotiation. In terms of success post, you know, success right away, I mean, this is a 48-game season.
Yep.
You hear all about sample size and blah, blah, blah. Sometimes it's a little bit overrated. But there is truth to it as well. And a 48-game season, you know, who knows? I would venture to guess the more successful teams would be the teams that are coming back with a relatively similar roster. So, like, the New York Rangers.
Yep.
Remus, are you okay over there? Remus is choking.
Hacking up a lung ream.
I'm sorry. I know you guys are trying to do a show, but I can't stop coughing.
The Rangers, for example, they add a guy like Rick Nash. Everything else stays relatively the same. So you're adding in one guy, but your whole key to your game is your defense, shot blocking, and goaltending. So I think that, you know, Tortorella knows the team. He knows the players. I think that's going to be fine. So you look at the Rangers. Okay, they look like they're going to be all right. A team like Detroit. Well, you're bringing in maybe an older squad, but everybody knows the system. Everybody knows each other. Everybody knows the coach. There's no ambiguity there.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say that the teams that have worked in their system and that are veterans or better able to prepare might be better off. A team like the Edmonton with all the talent in the world, they can make a crazy run one way or another way. I think it's, you know, there's a boom or bust with Edmonton because new coach, still some weakness on defense, can certainly create offense, but say they go in a lull offensively for 5 games and they can't defend, boom, you lose 5 games in a row. It's a 48-game season.
That's just it. You can't afford any significant losing streak whatsoever. And, I mean, that's going to – I mean, you know, you talk about it. You know, we've been talking about it. We talked with people on the street, whatever. That's the part that's going to sort of be the most you know, for lack of a better word, fun aspect of it is if you slump at all, you just can't afford to, you might be behind the eight ball so quickly if you start slowly, you don't have the capability, there's not the time to bounce back that there is in an 82-game season.
And even though the Oilers have an embarrassment of riches, you know, looking at this short season, the veteran teams are also better able to deal with that adversity and the losing streaks early on. The Oilers are a young team. And, you know, the Jets, again, last year struggled on the road, and they struggled with their confidence. And, you know, there were issues with trying to control Evander Kane off the ice. So there are going to be a lot of different types of, you know, dramas, if you want to call it that, in a 48-game season.
The team that has players that come into camp, whatever camp it's going to be, who come into the season in lousy shape are going to be in trouble.
And that's true in some teams that are playing. But think about a team like St. Louis.
Okay.
You have a pretty good core.
Yeah.
Relatively young.
Successful last year.
Played together. Got to know Ken Hitchcock's system. So not too old that they tire quickly because they're playing too many games.
Mm-hmm.
But have also played together. Have come up through the system. Bought into Ken Hitchcock's style. Have two goaltenders who can play. So any worries about back-to-backs? A little bit out the window. What about a team like that? That may be a team that you really have to watch for to maybe ascend even further up the Western Conference standings.
Do you think there's a Stanley Cup hangover possibility for the Kings this year? Or
no.
Just because there's been such a lengthy break between when the celebrations, you know, ended after they all got their day with the cup and everything else and the start of the season now, you know, middle of January?
The idea with a Stanley Cup hangover is really that you're playing so quickly after. You know, you finish end of June, you're back in camp September. So you have 2 months off, you try and unwind, and you're back at it, and the motivation, and you're tired. They've had so much time off, I don't think there's an issue there at all. Now, the Rangers in 94, they had the break because it was a 95, it was a shortened season.
Right, started a similar time frame.
But they just didn't get together, and they missed the playoffs the next year, actually.
That's right.
But I don't think there's a, and so maybe that would be the contradiction.
It's funny because the Devils missed the playoffs the year after they won, remember that?
So but I don't think personally that it's going to cause a hangover. If the LA doesn't perform well, I don't think it'll be because of that directly.
The Stanley Cup, it's funny, Drew. I just wanted to quickly add to that. The Stanley Cup hangover to me is funny because remember when the Vancouver Canucks went to the Stanley Cup Finals against the Boston Bruins and Kessler was playing through all of that pain and then it affected him. Let's be honest, last year he wasn't the same player. But you look at the LA Kings and their team is almost exactly the same. The Rangers team is exactly the same. There are only a few teams that really reloaded this past offseason, Tampa Bay probably being one of them. But
well, you're assuming Tampa Bay is going to be in a better – their goaltending can't be any worse, and you're assuming Lindback is going to be a significant answer for them.
But to Ezzy's point about Vancouver, if you go back and say there's a lockout last year, maybe Kessler sits out. Obviously, he sits out. He rests. Maybe he's okay or in better shape, although he's still injured now.
Well, that's – we talked about it a couple of weeks on the show where it's been reported that Kessler's probably not going to be ready necessarily for the 20th of January or the 19th of January.
Kessler was banged up. I mean, he had a few injuries going there, so he's a guy that might not be back till February, but he was dealing with a lot of injuries, and he probably shouldn't have been playing during last year's playoffs.
And injuries, you know, we don't know what will happen with injuries, but they'll have such a significant impact. We spoke about the Jets. No Bogosian kills their second unit in terms of defending against the other team's second line. So a team like the Jets, with a little bit of depth issues, can't afford injuries.
Mm-hmm.
A team with a little bit more depth is able to fend them off a little bit better. And we don't know what the injuries will be, but that's something to obviously take into account. So the deeper teams, not that you generally wouldn't lean towards them anyhow, but in particular in a shortened season.
Before we go to break, quickly, you know, sometimes it's very – there's a lot of stuff on Twitter that makes you pull your hair out and you hate, and there's sometimes that people come through in the clutch for us.
You've been doing that quite a bit.
Yes, exactly. There's sometimes where people come through in the clutch for us. At Spatula Pete, he tweets at Illegal Curve, since we brought it up again, the east-west difference between Detroit and Columbus is less than 10 kilometers. Columbus is 0.05 degrees latitude further east than Detroit.
So it's, I mean, great. First off, Spatula Pete is one of the best names I've ever heard. But that basically means it's negligible.
Yeah, that would be what Spatula Pete would be saying. Yeah. Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 2:30 in the afternoon. Shortly thereafter, we're keeping abreast of all the latest developments in New York City. As soon as we hear news, you'll hear it first here on TSN 1290. We're going to go to New York right now.
expectations. The reason, mediator Scott Beckenbaugh, after meeting with both sides back and forth all day Friday, came to the determination that perhaps there was enough traction the two sides needed to get together. So the NHL made the block and a half walk down here to the players' hotel, and that is where they are meeting right now. Does it mean a deal is close? We don't know. If there's one thing we know about these two sides is that when things look positive, they can blow up really fast. That being said, in order for a deal to be done, they have to be in the same room. And once again, here in Manhattan, the NHL and the PA are meeting face-to-face.
And you can follow along on TSN.ca. We'll, of course, have more coming up on SportsCenter.
That was Ryan Rashog reporting for TSN about what's happened in New York so far today. As you can see, it's been a fluid day of news and negotiations throughout the NHL-PA-CBA saga. We'll try and keep you abreast as quickly as we possibly can here on TSN 1290. Boys, does a deal get done this weekend?
Yeah, Drew, you mean like by the end of Sunday? I do think that, but man, I made so many predictions about when I thought this would end. I think a deal gets done eventually anyhow. I've said that all along. I'm not going to change my opinion now. It is what it is.
Yeah. I think if a deal doesn't get done by Sunday night, Richie, it gets done by Monday or Tuesday.
They can't leave it
till later next week, even though that might be the deadline that the NHL has set. They're close. We've already heard today that the pension issue has been resolved between the NHL and the NHLPA, and they're getting closer to the salary cap number. Larry Brooks, as Richie mentioned, says that, you know, that salary cap number might be actually $63 or $64 million, which means that, you know, the NHL might have to give the NHLPA. So they're close, and they've been close before, but I think they're closer than they've ever been.
Jeff O'Neill on Twitter, who's proven to be a moron on Twitter throughout the CBA negotiations, one of the dumber players, in fact, on Twitter, or ex-players as the case may be, tweeted 8 minutes ago that breaking news, the NHL lockout is over. Camp opens January 12th, and it's a 50-game season. Do you think Jeff O'Neill's really the one who's going to break the news regarding this lockout?
I don't know.
Wouldn't that be ironic? One of the dumber guys who's been under the most vitriol, who's made some of the most inappropriate comments throughout the entire lockout, is the one who actually gets the scoop first?
Well, we don't know the answer to that, but if it's not true, he's just not going to...
Well, he already lost all... I mean, he had some comments earlier this year that got him in trouble with the You Can Play team. You know, the You Can Play movement had some... inappropriate comments, I guess, is the nicest way of putting it. So, you know, you can take what Jeff O'Neill says with a pretty big grain of salt. I'm going to rely on the, you know, your typical regulars that you would count on to report this news.
Right, and I think we're at the stage where, what is it, day 100 and who cares? day 110 or whatever it is, 106, 107.
Yeah.
But we're at the situation where people, you know, members of the hockey media are saying it's close, and then other members of the hockey media are saying, okay, don't get too ahead of yourself. So it's almost like one of those situations where I think everyone knows it's close, but everyone's also knows that what happened in early December, where last time they were really close. So
day 112 of the lockout.
Yeah.
Yeah, to be perfectly accurate.
Why was that depressing?
I know. It is really depressing, but it's hopefully the end is near. In that.
We can... Time is running out.
I think that's Remo's favorite clip. Remo loves that clip more than anybody.
You can't necessarily blame him. I mean, the number of times that you can say time is running out.
Well,
between
it was a good one.
Between
good one.
The Phoenix Coyote saga, the Atlanta Thrasher saga, lockout.
If you look at what's remaining, if the pension issue is indeed solved, I mean, you're looking at variance being an issue, term limit being an issue. And I'm not sure if anything else is really a significant issue.
Those are the ones that we've been, you know, and those are the ones that were included in the show plan for the most part as the outstanding sticking points.
Let's delve into to variance. We talked about it with James Myrtle at the 1 o'clock, so the top of the second hour. And variance means, and let's just explain it for the people, because, I mean, James was on for a shorter period of time. So if it's a 10% variance, and he explained it well, a 10% variance would mean that if the guy signs for $10 million.
Yeah.
The salary can only change every year by 10%, so it can go to 9, to 8, to 7, to 6.
The $1 million is the most it can change on a year-by-year basis,
yeah.
The 10%. If it's 20%, it's the same thing.
So if it's 30%, it's a little bit different. But the NHL is kind of proposing if it's 30% variance from year to year.
Yeah, it can never drop more than 60% of the minimum salary.
It's really, I mean, you're boxing really the teams in. So
It's everything that's being done at this point. It's just to prevent the general managers from circumventing the system.
So, I mean, if you look at a 20% variance, then if you start signing a guy for $10 million, right, sign a guy for 10, and then you could sign him for 8, and then 6. If you don't have a bottom cap, I could go to 4. So I don't necessarily see just a 20% and calling it a day. You're either going to have one or the other. Maybe a 50% cap, meaning you can if you sign for $10 million, you can never go below 5.
Mm-hmm.
And the variance can be 20 to 25% per year kind of thing. Because in reality, you're capping it anyhow. Let's give an example to the listeners. If you sign a guy for $10 million the first year,
yeah,
and you can never go below the minimum of 50% of his salary, so the contract can never go below $5 million, if you have a variance of 25%, then you go $10 million the first year, 7.5, 5, and then you can't get any lower than 5.
That's
Doesn't
right.
that seem like it would be something that could work?
Of course. There's so much that can work. Yeah. It's amazing we're at this point in time. It's not like, you know... At no point in time throughout this entire negotiation has there ever been an issue that people have just had to throw their hands up in the air and say, I don't know how they're going to solve this one.
I agree.
And that's the part that's the most frustrating.
Term limits is something that you know it's going to be around. It's going to be 7. The question is, yep. to me, is it 7 with 8 years for your own, or is it just 7 flat?
Or is it 6 and then 7 for your own? I mean,
I don't know if PA will go to 6.
Maybe, I don't think the
PA... the other issue is, of course, as Larry Brooks tweeted out, maybe the cap going to 62.5. Do they say we'll go to 7 years instead of 8 for the player? Maybe the players say, hey, we'll go to 7 years for a cap of contracts. If you go to 62.5 or 63 for the cap and the hard cap in 2013-14. These are all the things being discussed right now.
Yeah, the part that I like is, we have a pretty good understanding of the contracting rules as they currently exist in the NHL.
Mm-hmm.
They're not going to change tremendously dramatically in terms of, when does a guy become a UFA, when does a guy become an RFA. It's pretty similar to how it currently is. The difference is largely how long can you sign your own guy for or an unrestricted free agent for, and, how much can the contract vary year by year?
Well, Drew, the NHL had that in their early offer, and we know that that early offer was a farce.
Well, I mean, the early offer, sure. Nobody remembers that.
Exactly. That was... 112 days ago or whatever. But that's off the table as far as the free agent. It looks like the free agency age and the entry-level contracts are going to stay the same. And you're right. Now the most important things, and people have heard this for a week now, is what's the 2013-2014 cap going to be? And then all this variance business and escrow, because they're obviously related. So it looks like...
The average hockey fan doesn't care about escrow.
Well,
the only people who care about escrow are the players.
If you do care about escrow, you should probably reevaluate your life.
Well, of course, are you that? Oh, my God, I can't believe that player making $8 million a year has to give up $800,000 in escrow. Let's take a tag day for him. I'm going to go stand outside the Safeway and collect change on his behalf.
Nobody. The only people that care about escrow are agents or actuaries or accountants. I don't know. But just for the people that weren't listening to James Myrtle earlier, escrow basically means the amount of money you take from your contract. And it's taken off. So
to ensure that
it
fits within proper revenues are paid out based upon proper salaries are paid out based upon total league revenue.
Yeah. So the salary cap goes up, you pay more.
Take this again for what it's worth. Brett Hedekin is confirming Jeff O'Neill. So
what is this? Are former players now the new insiders?
Well, hold on a second. Why wouldn't they be? That Brett Hedekin and Jeff O'Neill were both part of the last lockout. Jeff O'Neill played in Carolina, played in Toronto.
Oh, they're still in tune with
Brett
what's
Hedekin
going on.
Brett Hedekin does the games for Comcast in San Jose, played in Carolina as well, so they're former teammates, I believe, playing on those teams together. And Hedekin played in Vancouver. They have many contacts.
Yep.
I mean, he played in Florida, Hedekin. I'm just tossing off the team he played on. They certainly, I don't know why we would completely discount players from reporting that, former players.
Nothing official yet that I've heard, but several sources have said it's done. Let's hope this is official. That's what Brett Hedekin said.
Well, I can tell you that the deal isn't done.
That, of course, is based on that's the old audio from when the Jets were coming back to Winnipeg.
Dreger hasn't confirmed that there is a deal yet. Bob McKenzie's not really on this because he's been doing the World Juniors.
Yeah.
LeBron hasn't confirmed it. Freeman, none of those guys yet.
But all silent from New York.
But who's to say that they're going to break it? Stories like this that are percolating for so long, sometimes it is a random person or a former player who kind of tosses out the first nugget.
Yeah. I mean, it's exactly. It can come from a source. The truth of the matter is, none of us care who the actual source is.
And
I don't care. I just wanted them to be right.
Is this deal going to be, like, Are we in this room going to applaud when a deal is done?
No. We're going to be... My wife's going to applaud that I'm not at home every single night anymore.
I'm going to applaud that. I'm actually not going to applaud that. I'm going to have to see.
I'm just going
to
step a little bit less close to the
to the ledge. Yeah.
But you know, but I think what happens is, you know, we'll be happy when a deal is done and hopefully done. But I don't think there has to be a form of ecstasy from this all because of how much...
Nobody should be patting themselves on the back. Nobody should be celebrating.
You don't want to touch ecstasy anyways. It's dangerous.
The owners, the players, but the fans most of all shouldn't be jumping. They should be still angry, I think.
Well, do you think there's going to be... You know,
Not here.
Do you think there's vitriol somewhere? Do you think there's fans with vitriol in their heart?
For sure, Drew. Why not?
Well, I mean, but you don't... In 04, 05, I thought you felt a more palpable dislike
because
for both sides.
No, I don't think so at all.
I think it's a different whole. So much has changed in 8 years now.
Maybe it's just me. Maybe
fighting
now
over nothing right now.
I know they're fighting over nothing. Maybe it's now that. Maybe it's from my perspective that. And I mean, I know that I know this. But you know, 8 years ago, you know, you're 21, 22 years old. Maybe you don't.
Well, Drew, you were 62.
Yes, I was 62 years old, of course. Maybe you don't realize how much of it when you're that young. How much of it is a business versus now? Now, you know, I'm not angry. I say it's a business.
You're annoyed more so.
No.
Apathetic.
It's a business that costs a bunch of people their like incomes and restaurants. And
I agree.
In the company.
Drew, what are you right now? Hungry? What do you want? Can I get you something?
No. A business, by the way, has obviously come to be with the internet and reporting, and more so the cap and the statistics and all that stuff. But at the end of the day, it's a game that many people rely on as their livelihoods. And they've thrown much of it away for a period of time to gain very little.
Do you feel anger to both sides, though? Are you angry at both sides?
I mean, I'm not personalizing it as much, but having said that, let's be honest here. A lot of people are, and I understand that, because they've wasted a lot of time. They could have come to an agreement like this in the summer if they would take away their pride, take away their egos, and try and get something done on a fairly reasonable level. But instead, they wanted to pad their egos, and they want, you know, oh, they have to say, oh, you work towards a deadline. Well, why is the arbitrary deadline now as opposed to the 82-game season? Why shouldn't that be the deadline?
Well, it's funny, Richie. Drew asks us if we're angry. I don't think it really matters what I think or what you think, even though I'd like to think that people actually care what I think. But it's the fans. If the fans are angry,
well, I'm asking
express
you as
yourself.
Fan.
That's what matters, because the fans, the families taking their kids, I mean, the people that buy the jerseys, if those people are mad, they should be mad because, rightly so, they've been toyed with.
As a fan, of course I am. If I'm going to take it away and just speak for a fan, of course I am. Why? Because this is a fan-driven league. The ticket prices are ridiculous.
Just like our show is a fan-driven show.
The food is ridiculous. Everything about the costs are very ridiculous.
The popcorn at the MTS Center is very good, though.
But you passionately love it, and you go along with it as part of the deal. But you rely on this is not all TV money in this pie. It's mostly jersey sales and ticket sales and beer sales and all that stuff. And who pays for it?
The fans.
And what's their thank you back? Dave Schultz wrote a great article about it in the Globe and Mail.
Well,
what's their thank you back?
There isn't one.
How much does it cost to be a season ticket holder to the Leafs? Mm-hmm. $50,000.
Yeah. There's never a payback. You're absolutely right on that front.
You only move further and further away from the common fan.
Let's go to break. One final segment. You're listening to Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. One final segment for you on this Saturday afternoon. If news should break in New York, obviously between now and the top of the hour, and then after we're off the air during our coverage of the NFL wildcard games, we will have it for you first. Here on TSN 1290, just keep your radios tuned to this fine station. You'll hear about the end of the lockout first and foremost on this station. One final segment.
Rapid fire.
Rapid fire for this Saturday afternoon. Let's start with the New Jersey Devils. Jeff Vanderbeek.
Yes.
Is he already excited because it's about
excited.
The New Jersey Devils? Jeff Vanderbeek is now the sole owner of the Devils. It was announced earlier this week that Vanderbeek has sole ownership of the team after previous minority shareholders, Brick City LLC, have been bought out. In addition to becoming the sole owner, Vanderbeek has also restructured the team's debt, thereby hopefully providing some financial stability for a franchise that had been in financial trouble recently.
Yep.
While the financial situation of the team has been shaky, the on-ice play was not demonstrated by their Eastern Conference championship last season. What effect, if any, will this off-ice news have on the on-ice performance of the New Jersey Devils?
Well, it has ramifications, and when I saw this, I thought of Matty Lachlan, who does the Devils radio play-by-play, and we've had him on the show, you know, a half a dozen times. And, you know, we were talking to him when he was in town about their ownership issues. And this was a little bit unexpected. I thought that, you know, this might take a little longer, but it looks like there were three owners and he bought out the other two, or at least took full majority ownership, which is good. But I think it brings stability. And, you know, the Devils lost Parise, but they've got some other guys that are obviously really good players still in the system. And, you know, I think the most important thing is, you know, that for Lou Lamoriello, for instance, he knows now that he can go out and sign guys. He has the confidence in knowing, even though he said that, you know, he knew Jeff Vanderbeek was going to figure this stuff out. But, you know, he knows that he can go out there and sign a free agent if he wants to. So it's really good to know that there aren't ownership issues. And as Matty Lachlan told us, there were some major issues here with ownership of their new arena, the Prudential Center, and all of this debt that they had. But, you know, it's funny, though, Drew. Last year, the Devils, you know, weren't even expected to make the playoffs at one point, let alone go to the Eastern Conference Finals against the LA Kings. And they actually made quite a bit more money, you know, making the playoffs. And that helped big time, because the Devils didn't really have the best regular season last year. So, you know, I know this is rapid fire. I'm going on a bit of a rant here.
This is the mistake I make for asking a question about the New Jersey Devils.
Exactly.
Oh boy, is it?
Richie, you have anything you want to chime in on this one?
What was the original question again?
Yeah, it's good to have Drew back, but you know the questions he asked take about 2.5 minutes to get out. But no, Richie, we're, you know, the Jeff Vanderbeek and, you know, the impact he's going to have on the on-ice product.
He doesn't play. What's the difference?
Well, I mean, this is a team that on Canada Day, when the start of free agency, we thought that this team might have trouble re-signing Martin Brodeur because of their financial issues.
These teams are losing so much money. Why does everybody want to buy them?
It's a good question.
You know, we need a cap. We need to add more teams in the playoffs. We need a cap contract. It's like, come on. This is all to make franchise value go up. I mean, it doesn't make a difference. He's buying the team. It's not going to make a difference with the actual squad. The truth is he lost Parise, and they were kind of a Cinderella team before that. Brodeur's going to retire in a year or two, and they're going to be bad for a while.
Oh, that was depressing.
Yeah. Well, you're gonna watch all the games. I'll watch a few of them, but like, and it's not exactly the most exciting hockey in town.
Canadian defenseman Griffin Reinhart was handed down a 4-game suspension for his hit on U.S. player Vince Trocheck during the semifinals on Thursday. He missed the bronze medal game versus Russia, and unless he wins his appeal, will have 3 games more to serve at a later date. It's worth noting that the additional 3-game suspension cannot be served in the Canadian Hockey League or IIHF exhibition games. Reinhart has 1 year of World Junior eligibility left. What does this suspension do to Griffin Reinhart's future as a member of Team Canada? And if he ends up serving this 3-game suspension, during what tournament will he do so?
Well, he's already served 1 game.
Right, so he's got 3 games left.
A couple of things. This is, first off, I watched that game, and I thought that he shouldn't have been suspended 4 games for that. I thought that the high stick was, he was falling down, it was a follow-through, whatever. I'm pretty sure Team Canada is appealing this.
The appeal will be heard in January.
So, I mean, it might get reduced, but I still think it'll be probably a couple games. But 4 games seemed a little excessive. But it seems like it would have to be in next year's World Juniors. That's what my answer would be, but he's not a guarantee to make the New York Islanders in the 2013-2014 season, so they might go back to Griffin Reinhart as a 19-year-old. But I would have to think that he would serve it next year. Hopefully it's not 3 games, because that would mean that he would miss almost the entire round-robin portion.
He slashed a guy in the face. It's not going to win the appeal.
Okay. But if you look at it, I wasn't asking if he's going to win the appeal. If you look at it, Richie, though.
Okay, no, by the time the question's over and answer's answer's over, the show's over.
If you had an attention span more than just a gnat, you might be able to figure it out.
Richie, if you look at what happened, though, he's falling down, and it's a follow-through. It's not like he just walked up and slashed.
I don't buy that. I looked at it there. I didn't buy that. In terms of when he'll serve it, Drew,
yeah.
I don't know if the Islanders will rush him out. You know, they have guys in the back end there. I think they trust. And Reinhart didn't play a ton in this tournament. He's more of a stay-at-home guy. If he does play next year in the tournament, so he misses the first 3 meaningless games. As you can tell, this year they're clearly meaningless. So I would say it'd probably be next year's World Junior. And Grant, Sonia seem to be of the belief that he'd be returning next year.
As the world now knows, New York Jets head coach Rex Ryan has a tattoo on his bicep of a woman that looks like his wife wearing a Mark Sanchez jersey while in a T-bowing position.
That's weird, because Ezzie has a tattoo of you.
Mm-hmm.
in an Andre Pavlik jersey on his arm.
Very odd. Might be the greatest tattoo of all time. If you haven't seen it, we'll tweet it out on our Twitter page right now.
Take up your arm, Joe.
What NHL head coach, past or present, is most likely to get a similar tattoo, and what player would they be enshrining on their skin?
Here, I got a good one. I take this?
Yeah. Hold on. Who are you?
Who am I?
Go ahead.
Okay. Brian Burke has a tattoo of Todd Bertuzzi.
Ooh, interesting. I like that one.
They got history in Vancouver. Wasn't there some controversy with Burke and Bertuzzi with Team Canada in 06?
Team Canada? Oh, was there?
Oh, I don't know. Burke loves Bertuzzi. That's established.
Yeah, he signed him in Anaheim.
Yeah.
That's an interesting one, is he?
What about Larry Brooks having a John Tortorella tattoo? I don't know. That's just weird. That's a weird tattoo that Rex Ryan has. I don't know.
I actually thought it was going to be Kevin Lowe having a Brian Brooke tattoo.
Yeah, that's a good one.
That's also
or Dustin Pedner having a money tattoo with both of them on each side.
That would be also good. Thanks to TSN hockey insider Pierre LeBrun, the world was briefly swept up in the phenomenon known as Drager Face. LeBrun innocently tweeted out a photo of the media gathered on Wednesday night at NHL headquarters, but happened to snap the photo when Darren Dreger was awkwardly posed. Thanks to Jay Onright, the photo immediately went viral and Dreger Face was born, with Dreger's face being photoshopped into various iconic photos in history. Which Dreger Face creation was your favorite, and if you were to make your own Dreger Face photo, what historic picture would you photoshop him into?
Wow, that's a good one.
You had to know that Dreger Face was going to be a part of the show.
Yeah, that's true. What about Ezzy Face?
Well, Ezzy Face is something that... It's like the Ezzies. We don't need to talk any more about it.
Yeah, exactly. This is Dreger's time to shine. That's a difficult one. I don't even know what to say here. Considering that Dave Manuk of IllegalCurve.com photoshopped my face on...
No, we just said we don't need to talk about Ezzy Face.
I don't know. Let somebody else answer then.
Richard?
You don't have an answer? But where the picture would be and the location would be? You know, I gave this a lot of thought. Well, Remus, you, I want to get in here. Go ahead.
Darren Dreger as Steve Bartman in Game 6 of the 2003 NLCS.
That's fine.
That's not bad.
Not bad.
I was thinking more like Dreger's face on Wayne Gretzky after the 98 Olympics on the bench.
also a reasonable option.
Yeah.
Did you have a favorite of the Dreger faces that were created?
Nah, one Dreger face was enough for me.
Okay. Let's wrap the show up with cheers and jeers.
Oh,
really not good.
Very quickly, gentlemen.
I'm cheering Phil Housley. I think it's great. I know the Americans won, and people are disappointed, and I'm disappointed. You never want to lose to the Americans. Yeah, you know, you never want to lose to the Americans. It's always hard. But Phil Housley, you know, he gave us an interview when the Jets came back about a year, you know, over a year and a half ago now, about, and was a gentleman, was really nice, was really excited about Winnipeg having a team back, and I'm happy for him. He's always a great player to watch. The passes up the seam to Timo Solani for breakaways was like what I grew up on.
Has he?
I'm going to cheer Jacob Trouba and Mark Scheifele. They played really well in the World Junior Tournament, and I think there's
you're the most pandering cheers on a weekly basis.
There's John Gooden of TSN Radio.
He loves everybody.
There's a lot to look forward to for Jets fans, so obviously you guys have mocked me already, so I'll just...
Look at this defenseman.
I'm going to cheer the Columbus Blue... the city of Columbus as a hockey town. I was in Columbus last week, just for the day. A lot of people were talking hockey in Columbus. The R Bar, which is this famous sports bar right next to the arena in Columbus, was apparently open and packed this morning, bright and early. Columbus is a hockey town to watch the World Junior game. The NHL should be able to work in Columbus.
I agree.
And with John Davidson now running that helm there, I think good things are in store for the Columbus franchise, and you will see Columbus as one of the hot spots for hockey in the next 5 to 10 years.
Boone Jenner, Ryan Murray, Ryan Johansson.
Good things.
Dreger.
Exactly. Dreger face, exactly. Good things are in store for the city of Columbus hockey-wise. That's it for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on this Saturday afternoon. Stay tuned to TSN 1290. As news breaks from New York City, we will have it for you first and foremost on this station. Big thank you to our guests, Dennis Bayak, James Myrtle, and Grant Saunier. Thank you to our sponsors, Carbone Coal-Fired Pizza, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, and David Carr of Monopoly Realty. In case you missed any of the program, it will be available to download on Twitter. You can search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on iTunes, pardon me, and you can send it to your iPod each and every week. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And the website with your latest NHL Winnipeg Jets news is www.illegalcurve.com. For producer Tim, for producer Remus, for Ezra Ginsberg, for Richard Pollock, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. NFL wild card action is next on TSN 1290.
You've been listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Join us again for serious hockey talk, Saturdays from noon to 3. The Illegal Curve Hockey Show, only on TSN 1290. Your official home of the Winnipeg Jets.